towards the end of the session, Sureshwar Prabhu was so kindly continuing to sit in on this, was requesting me to get to the more positive side. That, you know, what do we do about all this? I mean, I only just started the negative side. There is, of course, it's true, if we look for faults, we can find many. And usually this is what I say to devotees when they come and tell me this problem, that problem. Definitely there are faults. If you look, you can find it. Again, you always have to look to see the good thing. Again, I have to state it because it can sound pretty dismal when we're talking about some of the less palatable features of our movement. But again, I want to say that I'm trying to be realistic on the Madhyamadhikari platform. That means not the realism of an Uttamadhikari may seem to a hard-headed realist. It may seem to be a utopian kind of realism. Actually, that is realism. There's a vision of an Uttamadhikari. But a Madhyamadhikari has to see the world in a according to its own terms so that he can preach within it. So it is possible to become a total cynic or to become totally discouraged, but rather the aim of my holding this seminar isn't, I'm not trying to make, it's really not meant to have that effect, and if it is, I'm failing. But the point is that many people, many devotees, they start to see all these things around them, and then without any, without having a philosophical vision of it, which I'm trying to give here, they become discouraged and discontented and upset and go away. So the whole thing is I'm trying to see, without being, see some of the realities. I think about myself, it could be said that I'm realistic, but at the same time not pessimistic. I'm also enthusiastic about the prospects of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world and going on with it. So, like I said, anyone who's been in the movement all this time, you must have seen so many things and heard of so many things which aren't, which are quite distant from the ideals of this movement. So I was saying that we have to be not only idealistic but pragmatic also. But actually, we have to remain idealistic unless we have faith that there is a higher ideal. Then we just become existentialists. It's even on the material platform, hard-headed realists, they can become an existentialist like this Camus. Correct me if I got the pronunciation. Camus, is it? He saw the world and he saw it's just absurd. There's nothing good in it. And the only question left in life is whether to die now by committing suicide or just wait for it to happen to you sooner or later. That's what happens if you look at the world in a realistic manner without having a higher ideal. That's why psychologists, they say it's good to be religious. Just so you can cope with the world. It helps you to cope with the world. They don't believe in God. But they just say it's good to have an abstract idea of some higher ideal. But our movement is supposed to be philosophical. It's not that we imagine God, but rather we understand that there must be God, and unless there is God, then unless the ultimate principle of everything is good, then Camus is right. You might as well just cut your throat. But according to the Vedic Shastras, or drive yourself over a cliff, or whatever you want to do. There are so many ways. You can get a book on various methods of how to commit suicide. So, but according to the Vedic scriptures, you become a ghost. So there's no value in doing that. So we remain idealists. But an idealist should also be a pragmatist. You see, Prabhupada, there's so many things that can be said about Prabhupada. He was absolutely an idealist. He had full faith in the holy names of Krishna that no one else had. No one among his godbrothers believed that Prabhupada could go to the Western countries and make devotees. And even when they came back to India, many of them didn't believe they're actually devotees. They thought they're just hippies, they're going through a phase, and you know, that's it, they'll be finished in a few years. Most of Prabhupada's godbrothers, even at that, now they're running around, chasing around after ISKCON and taking a few people and initiating here and there. In those days, they said that even to initiate Westerners is wrong. So Prabhupada was an idealist, a pure idealist, inasmuch as he had full faith in the higher ideal that by the power of the holy names of Krishna, that by chanting the holy names, people can become purified. Prabhupada was also... Hare Krishna. We're idealists and pragmatists also. We believe that microphones can work, but we also pragmatically accept that a lot of the time they don't. Hare Krishna. We don't give up speaking. We. Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada was another reason why Prabhupada was able to be successful, but he had full faith in the ideal. But actually, Prabhupada's faith in the ideal translated into his pragmatism, that Krishna blessed him with the pragmatism to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Because he had full faith in that ideal, and he knew he was working in a world which is far away from that ideal, but he pragmatically worked towards it. Why would he even try? Because he had faith that everything is possible by the grace of Krishna. That Prabhupada's wonderful transcendental mixture of idealism and pragmatism was revealed in so many ways, but I'm specifically thinking of one incident. Those last 6 months, when Prabhupada was simply lying on a bed in Vrindavan. As Prabhupada said, I am lying on my bed, this old man, but I'm still beating my drum all over the world. My book distribution is going on all over the world. So he called, please move in a little bit, give some space to Matajis, sitting at the back there, very patiently sitting at the back, taking the humble position. So, Prabhupada called Giriraj Maharaj, who's Brahmacharya, and he actually took sannyas after Prabhupada departed. Although he was practically considered among the sannyasis at that time, also was one of Prabhupada's confidential devotees. So he said so many interesting things to Giriraj Maharaj. One of them was this, he called Giriraj Maharaj and he asked him, how will this movement go on after I leave? What a question. Because actually there are some things which devotees who are present when Prabhupada was physically present among us, that they can perceive, which it's difficult, even if we tell you, it's difficult for others to understand. One of the things is how much dependent we were upon Srila Prabhupada. Dependent in the sense that we would always go to him for advice, he would have the final word on everything. We didn't, we were, in many ways we were like children who the parents maybe gave a little responsibility, we're still very much like children. Under Prabhupada's direction. And That was a lot of the shock after Prabhupada, immediately after Prabhupada left. Devotees were wondering, we just come to that, how is this movement going to go on? It was going on, doing book distribution and everything. We just couldn't imagine. It's gone without Prabhupada. It's just like that. Actually, that was there also with Tamal Krishna. What is it? It's gone, and Tamal Krishna isn't here. So it was like that, but on a much deeper scale, affected everyone very deeply with the departure of Prabhupada. So, what will happen to this movement after I leave? So, Giriraj Maharaj replied, how will it go on, Prabhupada said? And Giriraj Maharaj said that, well, it depends on the devotee's sincerity. That's a good reply, isn't it? Depends on the devotee's sincerity. Prabhupada said, sincerity, yes. And intelligence also. So idealism and pragmatism. And in those days he was also going over the bank accounts with Giriraj Maharaj. In those days when Prabhupada could hardly talk, let alone he could hardly move any limb of his body, but somehow was moving his lips to speak occasionally. He was seeing what is the position of the accounts. Very practical. So, devotees who are in touch with Prabhupada, they retain the ideal of this movement. Actually, what is the answer? What is the answer to this problem? The answer is always Krishna consciousness. The answer is very simple. How to bring that to the world and to every aspect of our movement, that is the challenge. Just like theoretically, Prabhupada went to the West, all his godbrothers, if they're asked about the world problems, what's the solution? They'd say Krishna consciousness. They know the philosophy, but how actually to put that into effect, that Prabhupada was able to do. So sincerity, idealism, and intelligence also, how to apply that. Now, individually, how to keep the focus. Again, if we're in touch with Prabhupada was in touch with his spiritual master. Therefore, he was able to manifest the desires of his spiritual master within this world, even though others had to a large extent given up on it. I've been doing a lot of research on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, writing a book about his divine grace. And you'll find from his writings that, and not only his writings, the writings of his disciples at that time, there was a lot of talk. It was a regular topic about how the Krishna conscious movement is going to spread all over the world. Prithivite ache gata nagara vidya sabarta pracha hoibe morana. It was a... Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself said that within a short time there will be 50 lakhs, 5 million devotees all over the world. So he made many such statements. That was the time of when the British Raj. The British were direct, and now they indirectly the Western megalithic, monolithic, or whatever you want to call them, companies. They're ruling the world indirectly, economically. But in those days, the prospect of Westerners listening to Indians seemed very remote. That was Prabhupada's objection when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His friend dragged him. Prabhupada said dragged. He made it like an, what's that word, onomatopoeic? That's not exactly the word. He dragged me, Prabhupada said. He made the word like he was feeling being dragged. And Prabhupada was offered obeisances. He'd never seen this sadhu before. He'd never heard of this sadhu before. And before Prabhupada could even get up, Prabhupada said, you are educated young men. You should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's his first words. So Prabhupada protested that we are a slaved country, enslaved country. Who will listen to our message? So that seemed to be a very reasonable objection. Who's going to listen to? That's what also when Prabhupada's Golden Brothers went to the West, that objection was made. That one Lady Wellesley said to Goswami Maharaj, one of Prabhupada's God brothers, that your men, they come to our country, they get a degree, they go back to their country and they become a big man on the basis of our degree. Then what have we got to learn from you? So it seemed, please come inside, please make some room for this. It seemed like an impossible prospect that Krishna consciousness could spread all over the world from the pragmatic point of view, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by his preaching, by his full conviction, he was able to convince his followers that this movement is going to spread all over the world very soon. But after the departure of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to a large extent, that spirit was lost. And the history of the Gauri Math after the departure of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is there was a lot of infighting, and the original movement split into so many groups. In that way, ISKCON is doing far better. We're still pretty much unified. It is one movement. It has different flavors and different compartments. But one of Prabhupada's instructions, that important instruction, that your love for me will be shown by how we cooperate to keep this room together after I depart. I would say in general that the members of our movement, the leaders of our movement, have taken this very seriously. It could be said that in the name of unity, sometimes we've like compromised to accommodate everybody. That could also be an objection. Unity, actually this was Kirtananda Maharaj's, when he went out on his own tangent, he said that purity is more important than unity. And he represented that I am pure, everyone else in ISKCON is united, but I am pure, so better you should follow me. But it was eventually found that even maybe he was pure, I don't know, but he wasn't able to maintain his purity because it seems that he didn't please Srila Prabhupada by his endeavor to go outside ISKCON and work separately. So Prabhupada Prabhupada has made it very clear that he wants us all to work together. And Prabhupada is, anyway, I'm jumping a little bit ahead here, so about how Prabhupada kept the ideal. He maintained the ideal of his spiritual master, and he was convinced that despite the fact that his own spiritual master's movement had appeared to fail, the ideal they had, this movement will spread all over the world, his spiritual master's movement had imploded and then splintered into different groups, and it was going on but not with the same spirit. In fact, you'll find the Gauri Math, it has much more spirit now than it had, say, 20 or 25 years ago. They've picked up on the spillover from ISKCON. And they've seen that actually there's ISKCON, Prabhupada's preaching all over the world has created a tremendous field for Krishna consciousness, where anyone with a little spunk and a little determination, they can go and preach anywhere and people will become devotees, practically anywhere in the world. So Prabhupada has created a field which others can take advantage of also. Although to date, the Gauri Math, there are different groups. When we say Gauri Math, it's like saying there's the diaspora, the Jewish tribes. So it's like you say the Jews, but it's like saying the Hindus. But you know, there's so many different groups within that. So, but anyway, there's so many groups and different. But mostly, it seems that they're growing due to the spillover from ISKCON. So. Actually, the potency to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, it seems to be almost wholly reposed in ISKCON. And actually, Srila Vishveshwar Tirtha Maharaj, who's the most prominent Madhva Sampradaya sannyasi. He's old now, he must be more than 90 years old, I would think now. But anyway, he's still in very good health and very strong mood. So about 3 or 4 years ago, at a public conference in Bangalore, which is the main city of Madhvas, so in a public conference, he said, and mostly all Madhvas and others, but he said that ISKCON is the only movement with the potency to spread Vishnu Bhakti all over the world. So others were, he's a staunch Vaishnava sannyasi, he recognized that. So Prabhupada recognized that the power or the mercy that of my spiritual master, that has not gone due to the institutional lacking of our spiritual master's institution. The mercy is always there. The possibility is always there. And Prabhupada actually in the beginning he wanted to work with the Chaitanya Math organization, which was like the original organization of the spiritual master, and then with any other groups, because Prabhupada recognized it. That if you're not all alone, if there are others to help it, and there is an institution, it's very helpful. Prabhupada in the beginning, his aim wasn't to start a movement of his own. He wanted to work with his godbrothers. Well, he said, I'll even be under the Chaitanya Mahat. I'll do everything in the name of the Chaitanya Mahat. And I wouldn't be surprised even if at the beginning Prabhupada would have been willing that that devotees could have all been initiated and everything in the Chaitanya Mahat. Even when Prabhupada, around 1970, he came and he wanted a place in Mayapur for his Western disciples to come. The first thing he did was go to the Chaitanya Mahat and said, give us a little land within your compound, we'll build a place within your compound. But they didn't want to. Then Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, this is manifesting here, this whole Mayapur city. So Prabhupada didn't reject the institution of his spiritual master, but practically it rejected him, because they weren't able to appreciate his expansive plans for fulfilling the desires of his spiritual master. So Prabhupada maintained faith in the ideal, and Prabhupada showed that by doing what he did, Prabhupada showed that the ability to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, although an institution is useful for doing that, ultimately that depends not so much on the formal makeup of the institution or one's position in it, but in one's faith in the order of the spiritual master. Because Prabhupada wasn't a big shot in the Gaudiya Math, not by any means. He was a known and respected devotee, but he was among the rank and file devotees. Grihastha was also, Grihasthas weren't expected to do anything very significant like sannyasis. It's the same thing nowadays. Grihasthas can preach as much, but still, they're usually not, you know, just the fact that they're not sannyasis. But Prabhupada, of course, he had taken sannyas by the time he went to the rest, but he thought, well, you know, he became old and he took sannyas. There's so many like that, so no one took him very seriously. He wasn't considered one of the big shots by any means. He was known and respected, but he was able to do what he did because he had firm faith that the principle that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave us, even though it appears to have been covered over by the clouds of the institutional discrepancies, it's never covered over, it's always there, it's always alive. Prabhupada once, he was asked, there was some discussion going on, and Prabhupada said that when I examine myself compared to my godbrothers, so many of them, they were great sannyasis, many of them, they had so much association with our spiritual master. Myself, I hardly met him more than a dozen times, Prabhupada said. Many of them were very austere, very renounced, whereas I was a householder, And Prabhupada, we could say in terms of like austerities, in terms of following Chaturmasya and eating and all these kind of things, that Prabhupada's godbrothers, many of them were, Prabhupada said, you know, so they're more austere. Prabhupada liked nice food. As one of my god sisters, this simple, elderly Indian lady said to me, she said, I used to cook for Prabhupada many times. He liked to eat nice food. So it's true. It's not that Prabhupada was a bogey, not that he was enjoying sense gratification, but he wasn't like Gorky Shardas Prabhupada Maharaj. He wasn't like that. His personality was, he gave his blood and his soul for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, but he didn't manifest a mood of extreme renunciation. So Prabhupada said, many of my godbrothers are more austere, more scholarly. Of course, we wouldn't agree, because we know Prabhupada's the greatest scholar. Scholar means he knew the Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness, was able to present it to others. But then there may have been several of Prabhupada's godbrothers who maybe knew more shlokas than Prabhupada. Or maybe even in terms of quoting different passages from the Goswami's writings and explaining very, very fine points of the philosophy in great detail. Actually, that was one of Prabhupada's great gifts, that he was able to take the essence without getting into all the, you know, a detail, and get hung up on that and try and discuss it in 50,000 different ways. But Prabhupada would just take the essence, you rascal, surrender to Krishna. So in that way, Prabhupada was the greatest philosopher. But anyway, I'm making it three or four words of Prabhupada, I'm now making it a detail of a detail of a detail of a detail. So, Prabhupada said, when I see so many of my godbrothers so learned, so renowned, big sannyasis, had so much association. When I see myself, I wonder how this wonderful thing could have happened to me, referring to spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And Prabhupada said, when I look, I can see that there is only one cause for this, because among my godbrothers, I was the only one who had full faith in the words of our spiritual master. So that is the active, principle in spiritual life. If we have full faith in the words of our spiritual master, which here, again, this could turn into, you know, a big theological discussion. But here when I say spiritual master, without negating the roles of our present spiritual masters in ISKCON, of whom I happen to be one of that condemned species. When we say full faith in the words of our spiritual master, then I'm going to say that should mean full faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada. Again, as I was saying the other day, that a spiritual master in our movement means a faithful follower of Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada's very special position is that he founded this Krishna conscious movement, and he, even though he taught the same philosophy as you'll find in any Gaudiya Math or whatever, but as Satsarup Maharaj has nicely analyzed in his Prabhupada Nectar series, there's one section where he talked about Prabhupada's personal stamp on ISKCON. There were certain ways of doing things that Prabhupada wanted. He wanted certain things done. Just like, for instance, there are so many different ways you could chant in kirtan, and ISKCON has done is doing a pretty good job of imagining various ways of chanting various holy names with other words attached to it. But Prabhupada wanted that mostly we chant Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra in kirtan. So that's one of the details of how Prabhupada wanted us to carry on with the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada wanted that his books be the basis of this movement, although there are many books. There are many important books. Chaitanya Bhagavat is an important book. Prabhupada wanted to try, he said, he mentioned he wanted to translate, but he didn't do it. Now his disciples are doing it. Shat Sandharva, such important books. They are practically the authoritative philosophical books about Sampradaya, but even that Prabhupada wanted to understand. We shall understand our Sampradaya Acharyas through how Prabhupada has taught us. Not that we'll become such great scholars that we read Jiva Goswami and then we say, well, actually Prabhupada got it wrong here. And Jiva Goswami, we have to understand Jiva Goswami, how he explains it. Then you're going to get off track. What does it mean to be a Prabhupada Anuga? It means to accept that Prabhupada is a special representative of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and it wasn't just a matter of spreading, but he established also. And if we remain linked with Prabhupada by knowing his instructions and following them, then we get the potency and the purity to remain in Krishna consciousness and to spread Krishna consciousness to others. So what is the solution to the manifold problems which I haven't even started to talk about? I guess in one sense there's no need to, because anyone who is somewhat intelligent, and we want intelligent people to join this movement. Only intelligent people can join, actually. Of course, sentimental people can. In India especially, people are pious. So often they're sentimental. But it requires a high level of piety, more than mundane piety, to join this movement. So intelligent devotees should keep in contact with the mainstream of ISKCON. Now it may seem that sometimes the mainstream has become over flooded by the subsidiary streams, and we used to talk about fringes. There was a word, part of the ISKCON jargon, you know, we have words like bloop. So fringy was one of those words. It means someone who was on the fringe of ISKCON but not really following properly. Now the fringies got promoted to become congregational devotees. And then it was considered that actually they're devotees. And actually it's a fact that one is on the fringe, not whether you're living in the temple or not living in the temple, but what is your commitment to Krishna consciousness? But now it might seem that the fringe level of Krishna consciousness in some places or in many ways it may seem to be almost like the mainstream. Like in some places in our movement it seems that devotees then more into astrology and counseling and what other kind of things? I don't know, there's so many strange things. Reiki, and so many Reiki, is it? So many different things, which, okay, astrology has its place. We're not against the Prabhupada said it's a bona fide science. So astrology has its place. And counseling, yeah, okay. Counseling means that's also the dati prati, gugyamakyati prichati. Counseling doesn't mean that you get a book from Freud and you read it and you try to understand through Freudian philosophy. Counseling should mean that speak to devotees on the basis of Krishna consciousness and encourage them to surrender to Krishna according to their particular circumstance. Or Reiki, the solution. The reason that you're not fully Krishna conscious because you haven't had a Reiki session. What we should do is we should do more Reiki and then people will be attracted and then we can preach Krishna. But then the person becomes, see this Reiki, I don't have anything against it per se. This came up when I was in that Prabhupada village or whatever it's called. But the thing is it's propagated through this absolutely shunyavadi medium. So mostly people who get into this Reiki, they get affected by all this nihilistic ideas which doesn't do any good for your Krishna consciousness. Reiki might be good for your health, and again, I'm not against it per se, but it's the bad association that comes with it, and then devotees, they get more into this health and, you know, Now you have to have some kind of pyramid on the floor and that will solve all the problems, or you know, whatever problems we have in our... There's one temple actually in India where for years there were so many problems. And the temple founded by Prabhupada and did so many things. They brought in the Ghostbusters, you know, had a whole ceremony and they threw out all the ghosts, and you know, the problems went on just the same as usual. Except that they had a few thousand rupees less, which they paid to the Ghostbusters. But anyway, that wasn't much compared to what was getting looted out the back door. And the Lord is always fighting with each other, and then, you know, this yagya and that yagya, and then eventually they got a decent temple president and everything went fine. So the real solution is Krishna consciousness. And there may be so many things on the side, and sometimes it may appear to come into the center. So that when you come to our ISKCON bookshop, you'll find so many different books, but you won't even find Prabhupada's books hardly at all, or you know, so many other things which we have to indirectly introduce Krishna. And the thing is, we remain so damn indirect that we never get even anywhere near Krishna conscious. You know, just be a vegetarian, or protect the animals. Be good, be nice. All the bogus yogis say that. All the rascals say, be nice. They're not being nice because they're not being Krishna conscious. They're smiling at you and being nice and patting you. That is violence. That is the worst violence. These people are worse than animal slaughterers. The people who pat you and say, be nice, be good, smile at others. They are worse than animal slaughterers, because at least the animal slaughterers, you know, they're demons. But the people who say, be nice, be good, smile, be happy, and have a nice day, and all this kind of thing, but don't teach you to surrender to Krishna, they're doing the worst violence, because they're making you think that you're being good and you're being religious. They're cheating you into thinking that you're spiritual when you're not at all. They're posing as spiritual guides. So without clear knowledge of Krishna consciousness, then everything is simply cheating. So we should, like I'm saying, how are we going to save ourselves from all this? Well, it seems pretty difficult. It could seem pretty difficult. There are actually at the present time various influences within our movement which are not, of course you could say it's my subjective opinion. If you like, you can say. I got the mic, so I'm saying. You chose to come and listen. So, anyway, in my subjective opinion, there are so many various influences which are not exactly to the point. Which people could say, you know, it's yes, it's also Krishna conscious. But we have to see the degree of Krishna consciousness also. We want 100, at least I hope we want 100% Krishna consciousness. As long as you have 10% Krishna consciousness, or 50% Krishna consciousness, or 90%, or 99%. Actually, if you get up to 90%, that's pretty good, because it's pretty difficult to go back once you get that high. But if it's only 10%, then you could remain a Hindu forever. So our aim and object is not to preach Hinduism, or to promote a new kind of worldwide Hinduism. So, how to protect ourselves against these various influences? I'm reminded of Dhruva Maharaj, when he was attacked by the Yakshas. And they sent so many different weapons which were overwhelming him, as he stood apparently alone on the battlefield. But then he was reminded with a heavenly voice, incorporeal voice. You've got this weapon, Narayanastra, the weapon of Lord Narayan. Utilize it. So he did. And then all those weapons which seemed about to overpower him, they just vanished because they were all illusory. If he had believed that that was reality, they would have overcome him. It's something like ghosts. If you're afraid of them, they catch you. If you're not afraid, if you know, go away. Just get out of here. Then they can't do anything to you. If you know that this nasty ghost is trying to threaten me. But anyway, I've got Krishna, so, you know, I don't have anything to do with you. Prabhupada said that once, that I was told, that Bhaktivedanta Menon, he was walking. Because actually there's, like many places in the world, there's so many ghosts there. There used to be a death home. He's an old person's home. People used to live there and die. So Prabhupada once brandished his stick. Go, we don't have anything to do with ghosts. My godfather told me this, circa 1976. So, if Dhruva Maharaj had taken that, if he had believed it was reality, then he would have been destroyed by those weapons. But then when he took shelter of Narayan, then he was able to dismiss them. So in the same way, the reality of Krishna consciousness, that is eternal. But the illusory effect of this material world, that is also eternal. But it doesn't affect those, it doesn't affect those who come out of this material, those who take shelter of Narayana. So we don't have to be affected by all these things if we have full faith in what Prabhupada gave us. We can remain fully protected. And we will have the intelligence to understand. If we regularly read Prabhupada's books, then we'll immediately understand that the life of Krishna consciousness is always alive. Just you read everyday Prabhupada's books. And you'll immediately understand that whatever problems there are in the world, in our movement, in my mind, there are so many different spheres of problems. But we'll realize that the only real problem is lack of Krishna consciousness. So that is again coming to the ideal. But we'll be able to, now the practically, we may not be able to change everything within our movement immediately. And practically we can expect that a big movement with a high ideal, spreading widely, spreading quickly, is always going to have such problems to some degree or other. Personally, I'm remaining confident and enthusiastic, but at the same time I'm surprised and somewhat dismayed at the degree to which our movement is not on the level of the ideal that it was. Even Krishna gets surprised at Maya sometimes. That's stated when his cowherd boyfriends entered the Aghasura. Aghasura was sitting there with his mouth wide open. They said, "Hey look, it's a big snake, come to eat us up. Let's go and have some fun, let's enter his mouth." And they ended in Krishna worship. Maya is very powerful. How could they do it? Why would anyone enter a snake's mouth? Of course, that was also a symptom of their faith in Krishna. So, seeing all this, seeing so many different things, I'm on the one hand dismayed, disappointed. On the other hand, hopeful. When I see so many devotees who are not bewildered by so many different things, and of course, this might sound very puffed up the way I'm talking, but it's almost like saying, "You know, I got it, and everyone else didn't get it." But I don't want to project like that, but at the same time I can see that there are various compromises within our movement. And there are many. We were talking yesterday about the GBC and this and that, but actually on the GBC there are different devotees. There are many devotees actually, I know because I speak to the GBC members, and there are certain members who, quite a few of them who are, and GBC and other leaders who are, they're also not very happy with so many different things, but at the same time they don't want to disturb the whole situation, and they're just within their own sphere, they're working to make things work according to the ideal that Prabhupada gave us. So we'll find that in different places the movement is going on in different ways. A lot depends on leaders actually, on the mood they set and the tenor they set. So I'm saying, problems have to overcome. Well, retain faith and keep association. Keep good association. One of the benefits of the modern communications age is that we can keep in association, even if we don't have personal or locally devotees, good association. But generally, we can find that out also. We can find out good association. There'll always be some devotees who we can find who would prefer to join us for kirtan and discussion of Krishna Katha. You see, it's different in different places. Just like someone came to me from Russia yesterday, I said, in general, the situation is not so bad in Russia anyway. I'm talking about more. The situation is worse in some areas of the things I've been talking about in America and some parts of Europe, maybe Australia, where there are many devotees who are loose, compromised, watching TV, maybe not fully chanting around, maybe not following the principles, maybe preaching, you don't even have to follow the principles, or like this. And accepted different modern rascalish philosophies and trying to blend it with Krishna consciousness. And then here in India, where our movement is very, actually in many ways very vibrant, there's a whole different other set of problems. Because, here there's, where things are going on well, then there are men and money, and that can cause other types of problems. So I didn't even get into discussing that. So, but I just started like talking about trying to find devotees who are interested to chant Hare Krishna and discussing about Krishna. I was seeing some Russian devotees, because actually in Russia you'll find probably everywhere there are devotees who are very eager to do like that. They're eager to hear and chant about Krishna. And in Dubai also, a lot of these things I'm talking about, you're staying in Dubai, you probably don't even know anything about it. You will come to know in the course of time anyway. But you won't find that there in Dubai. You'll just find that people are coming to Krishna consciousness. They want to do so because they're materially successful, but they want something more, and practically they don't have time to get into so many varieties of Maya, and they want to chant Hare Krishna. And even in Dubai, even though our movement is very different, we don't have a proper temple per se due to the situation, but it's manager, at least I would say, it's managerially, it's going on quite well. So, but there are other areas where you'll find that even most of the devotees, they'll maybe go to the Sunday feast, maybe not even every Sunday, but it's more like a social gathering, not a very strong mood of Krishna consciousness. So if you're in that kind of situation, well, you can find some devotees, there must be some devotees who are interested to be more serious about Krishna consciousness. You can set a good example. If no one likes to clean the temple, which is quite common, you can go and do it. You can try and set a better example. How? Now we've come to the topic, Sureshwar Prabhu's topic. What to do, how to cope with the situation. So one thing is to keep faith in the ideal. Don't become overwhelmed, because then you lose everything. You lose your Krishna consciousness. What's the use? If I'm so realistic, this is wrong, that's wrong, that, then you think, oh, Krishna consciousness is wrong. But we may think, well, it's right, but it's impossible to attain. Which also means that we don't have faith in Krishna. If we don't think that we can attain Krishna consciousness. So keeping faith in the ideal by keeping in contact with Prabhupada, by studying his books, and following his instructions the best we can. Good association is very important, keeping good association. And also not to become overly critical of those who we may perceive are not the kind of association we want to mix with very much. We should also keep good hope for them. And unless devotees sink down to the level of becoming offensive, in the compromise it can get down to the level of being actually offensive. And that has happened and is going on in our movement, I'm afraid to say. I mean, when I say in our movement, it's not like it's the, like we become adopted as one of the principles of ISKCON, but it does go on, where there is actual offensiveness towards Krishna and towards Prabhupada. You know, certain things are said because people don't want to accept certain things that Prabhupada say. They say, well, he only said like that because he was a 19th century Bengali, or he didn't really understand what he was talking about, and so we have to understand modern psychology and then we'll understand it better. These statements are offensive. That is called Guru-shu Naramati. To consider the Acharya as an ordinary person influenced by the material energy. So if someone's offensive, then we shouldn't be, then it becomes a mistake to be tolerant. One of the important principles that Rupa Goswami Prabhupada has described is that one should be very intolerant of offenses towards Vaishnavas. So I believe that one of the reasons that these various problems are manifesting in ISKCON is because we haven't been strong enough to cut out this mood of allowing everyone to say whatever they like, even if they start to criticize Srila Prabhupada. That should be cut out. Whoever it is, however so-called big they may be, anyway they're going to become a mouse. They already are. They're on their way to being converted to a mouse if they start to talk like that. Even if they ever became a tiger, then they're going to become a mouse. So we should be very clear that this offensiveness towards Srila Prabhupada should not be tolerated. But devotees who are somewhat weak, or they maybe not be following very strictly, if we think now I'm going to be very strict and then we become proud, then we also fall down. So we have to be very careful. So it's a matter of keeping good association and at the same time not being realistic and at the same time not being cynical or overly critical. It can be difficult to keep a balance. Maybe I've gone too far one way in this seminar. It's a tight rope, you know, this trapeze act. If you just slightly go a little bit either way, then you've got a long fall down. So it can be difficult. One has to pray to Guru and Krishna for the strength to remain alive in Krishna consciousness. On the one hand, not to become offensive to Vaishnavas, but in the name of not becoming offensive, just to tolerate and just say that everything is all the same, it's all one. Whether you follow strictly or don't follow strictly, it's all the same. This I see now. You see, previously our movement, there was a criticism, it was too fanatical. That just like, for instance, when I joined this movement, the temple commander, who's actually now a GBC and a guru, he had the policy of if people didn't get up in time, dragging them in their sleeping bag and throwing them in the shower. Cold, of course. And then when he moved to the other temple, the very place, then there's only one shower and about 60 brahmacharis. So the other tactic came into vogue of throwing them down the stairs in their sleeping bag. He doesn't do that nowadays, at least I haven't heard any reports, and I'm sure he would have heard them on the internet if he was still going on. But it could be said that was over fanatical. Personally, I'd rather have that mood than the present mood of let them lie in their sleeping bag all day and night. I'd rather throw them in the shower with them, maybe even down the stairs. Because after all, if you're going to live in an ashram, then you should be serious. Otherwise, what's the point? So it's perceived that our movement was over fanatical, and definitely there were various tendencies which just like two of the no anyway I won't say but in New York Temple under the guidance of one of the leading devotees at one point in time. I'm very sorry to say this, but it's true. It's one of those realities. It doesn't go on in ISKCON today, I'm glad to say. That the brahmacharis were so fixed up and staunch and determined that they'll never have anything to do with women, that if Mataji, lady devotee, came in the hallway, they would look the other way and spit. Isn't that horrible? I don't know how many of them did that. I'm sure all those who did that have, you know, been married and probably divorced also. Because if that's the way you think of women, you're never going to... If that's the way you think of women, then you didn't understand. The idea of being a staunch brahmacharya is, that is not the right idea. Anyone who does like that is offensive. So, anyway, we don't do those kind of things now. I mean, we did, that was only in one temple, in at one for some short time, but it did go... But it gives some idea of... It's just like nowadays we read in the newspapers of some young boy goes to school, and goes to school one day, and enters the school, and here we are at school, and then he pulls out his gun and shoots 15 people dead. So it's not like every kid in America does that. But it does, the fact that it's happened a few times suggests that, in general, the mentality of young boys at school in America is, we could say, highly frustrated, and there's something wrong with it. So in the same way, it's not that that it was widespread, it was not that it was all over ISKCON. It was only in one temple, of course it was a big temple, it was in New York, for a short time, that some of the brahmacharis were spitting in the presence of women. It came from this, you see, Prabhupada used to quote this verse, that nishtivanam cha, whenever I think, this Yamunacharya Prabhupada used to quote, that whenever I think of sex with a woman, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So they misunderstood. You're supposed to spit at your own lusty desires, at your own contamination, not at women. So they got it wrong. So anyway, it was going on for a short time in one place with a few people. But it does. There was throughout our movement, at least what I knew of it, there was somewhat overly fanatical mood against women like that. Actually, there was one sannyasi who came to London, and I was in London, and he was preaching, you know, very heavy against women and all this. Everyone could see he was very agitated, and actually he got married very shortly after that. Sannyasi. So one of the, actually you see the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis were living together. They didn't, they hardly spoke to each other, it was very chaste, but there was actually, even though we noticed, but there was respectful mood. The brahmacharis respected. I don't know what they thought, how we thought, but we respected their serious devotees. Okay. So then one of the brahmacharis asked that, well, after one of his, you know, heavy fired up classes, that shouldn't we respect women as our mothers? He said, you should think of them as tigers coming to suck your blood. And all the women, all the Mataji were sitting there in the class also. So there was the point I'm making here, getting diverted again, is that, you know, we tended to be somewhat overly extreme in many ways. They're all demons. Well, it's true, but it doesn't, but it's, anyone who's not in Krishna consciousness, they're a demon, yes, but there are categories also. Mostly people are misled, innocent and misled, according to Shastra. So now, at some point, our devotees recognize that we're being a little extreme here. We're kind of, we're a little bit out of sync with reality. So, you know, all this absolute extremism that, you know, all women are to be totally rejected, and you know, just like this, like the some kind of Nazi movement or something like that. So, anyway, It was wild. So, so now we've realized, well, actually we should become more mature. And actually the fact that we're able to discuss all these things openly, I think that's also a sign that our movement's become more mature. But I also feel that maybe we've gone too far the other way also. Is that now we're so tolerant and open-minded that instead of, like, in the past we made such distinctions, extremist kind of distinctions, that now we've taken it to the other extreme, that there's no proper distinction between how to properly practice Krishna consciousness or not. No proper social distinction here. I'm going to get shot probably, and it's dangerous to say this. No proper social distinction between men and women. We think it's all the same. Proper distinction between what is actual Krishna conscious Siddhanta and what are modern foolish kami ideas. Modern foolish kami ideas or old foolish kami ideas. Or, they're all foolish. There's a tendency in our movement to think that, well, this modern academic knowledge, it's very important and we should examine in this way. So we've gone too far the other way. This is my hypothesis here. Or another thing this idea is also leaking in from Gaudiya Math sources. That, Prabhupada, he's all right. Yeah, he's pretty good. He's just one of many. There's so many. So, a tendency not to take Prabhupada so seriously. So, fine tuning. How to see clearly with firm faith in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And at the same time, not be unintelligent or overly fanatical. Of course, what I'm saying is, I am within our movement among certain persons. I personally am known as a fanatic, fundamentalist, dinosaur, there are various terms. There are several of us who fit this description. So, I'm saying we shouldn't be overly fanatical, but what I say is considered by many to be overly fanatical. That you will have to decide with your good intelligence. I would say even if you are deemed to be somewhat fanatical, if as a result you stick strictly to the process of Krishna consciousness, then it's better than being known as a very broad-minded, fair, tolerant, good, nice, etc., etc. devotee with shorts on who comes to the temple once every few weeks wearing his shorts and talks about the baseball score with his friends, or plays baseball at the temple. So, when I read Prabhupada, this is what I get. I don't get this wishy-washy, do whatever you like and it's all Krishna consciousness. I don't get that. I mean, Prabhupada's books are very straightforward and very clear. And they're very heavy also. Guru means heavy. It's not that, you just chant Hare Krishna a little bit and then, do whatever you like. Never. Prabhupada said, disciple means one who is sold out to the spiritual master. He said, don't make a spiritual master like, don't keep him like a pet dog. Pat him on the head. When you like him, you call him and he licks you. And when you don't, you send him. And sometimes the dog barks, so you just put him out. So what were we saying? Keep faith in the ideal. Keep in contact with Prabhupada by reading his books. Keep good association. Now then, what to do? That's what to do. You're in a situation where most of the devotees and little loose and this and that. What to do? Well, it depends on the individual situation. It depends on your own determination, your own spunk. It can be very difficult to change a situation when devotees are, especially when devotees are all the devotees. Once they've got in a groove of being, of being not very serious, it's very difficult to get them out of it. So, again, it depends very much on who you are. Just like, if you're yourself a new in Krishna consciousness, there's not much you can do to change the situation in any given place. Even if you're older, it might be difficult. I want to speak of the whole paradigm and the whole movement. My overall approach to all this is to keep faith in the ideal, keep association with those who are fellow dinosaurs, you could say. They're various species, kind of different shapes and sizes, dinosaurs. And also, my personal approach is to write books, which I'm restating what Prabhupada said, maybe taking different instructions of Prabhupada and putting them together. I wrote that book, Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness. I have to write the book, Family Life in Krishna Consciousness. It's a big job. Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness is a small book. Basically, chant Hare Krishna, be strict, follow and go back to God. Grihastha life in Krishna consciousness is going to be a much bigger book. It's more complex. Family life is more complex because it's Brahmacharya life is just practically it's on the spiritual platform. Brahmacharity iti Brahmacharya. That's the very definition of Brahmacharya life. But householder life means the endeavor to be Krishna conscious in a situation which is by its nature it's compromised with the material energy. So it's more complex. So I'm writing books and then Vaishnava behavior. What is our culture? Giving details of so many things, and hopefully that book's Hare Krishna. It's coming. Krishna will. I'm sure Krishna wills it. So that's one reason I'm going to write books. Also, on some my personal approach is to approach different leaders and on certain issues to try to get things done through the mechanisms which our movement has, which are actually very, very slow moving. It's very difficult to get anything done especially when something's gone wrong. It's actually very easy. It seems to be very easy, maybe Maya works like that. It's very easy to introduce something which looks like Krishna consciousness but isn't. But to get it out again, once it's in, it's very difficult. Prabhupada actually wrote a letter. He said, you have to be very careful because once there's a leak in the boat, it's very difficult to mend it. He was talking about the institution, this thing. So, it's very difficult to change things. But we have to keep on trying. Frankly, my non-violent method, personally, I'm getting a little frustrated with it all, and I'm thinking of throwing a few hand grenades here and there, but let's see. In general, I don't recommend it, because I've never been much in favor of the revolutionary process, because revolution tends to, like I said, when you throw a bomb, they talk about the Big Bang Theory. And Big Bang, and then everything fell in place. But actually what happens with the Big Bang is that if there is anything in place, it all goes out of place. That's what happens with explosions. So it tends to fragment things. So in general, the idea to work within our movement and try to affect change without trying to blast the whole structure to pieces. Maybe instead of throwing a few bombs, we talk about slamming a few doors or making a little noise or something. But the thing is, at the same time, we have to be very careful not to undermine the authority structure. Even if there may be problems with authority, and it's not always, one thing I want to say also, there's so many things to say, but We're talking about leaders, but actually everyone in Krishna consciousness is supposed to be a leader, especially those who have taken Brahman initiation. Everyone's responsible. Are we part of the problem or part of the solution? We're all part of the problem. We're all, if there are problems within our mind, we should all think that we're all part of the problem. So we should all work towards a solution in various ways. Of course, it may not be so easy for you as for me to, you know, to say something to the GBC members. It's easy for me to get access to them. That's also, so you can work. You have to see. It's very difficult to say. In general, I don't recommend revolution. But one can work towards, Prabhupada spoke, when he's talking about changing society in general, talking about a peaceful revolution. So that's really the best thing. Brahma Teja, spiritual power. If by showing a better example, you can show in your life and you can influence others to show that by being Krishna conscious, without blaming others, actually we're very blissful. And you know, you're coming to the temple, you don't really have full faith in this and that, but you're kind of hanging around, but actually you're not, like, who's not following Krishna consciousness strictly, actually they're going to be miserable. Even though they may put on a show of being happy in their halfway house situation. But if we set that's really the best solution, to set a better example ourselves. It can be very slow, but if it's genuine, then that will ultimately be the solution. Anyway, Hare Krishna. There are many more things to be said, but I skimmed over. One whole area I didn't get into discussing was like personal institution, personal problems we have, like with individual devotees and individual leaders and so. Maybe we could discuss it tomorrow. It's another whole area which is very commonly found in our movement. But anyway, maybe we could discuss it tomorrow. But the actual problem is lack of Krishna consciousness. And the solution is Krishna consciousness. Again, that's idealistic. How to pragmatically put that into action. That we have to find the ways and means. Okay, let's turn it over. It's more food for thought. I'm not forming a political party here. We could, you know, let's make a resolution. We're going to do this and do that. Maybe I should. We could chalk out what are the problems and make a petition and send it to the GBC. Please do this. Please do that. We could do. But our movement, in some ways, follows Indian culture. Although one of the things I'm most concerned about in our movement is the deliberate moves to throw Indian culture out of our movement and put American so-called culture in instead. But some of the points of Indian culture that I've noticed within our movement is that in India, although there are certain legal systems how things should work, actually everything works by who you know. It's 1,000 people may sign a petition and send it to the MP, but if his friend goes and says something, it will be much more effective. His friend from school days or whatever. So it all works by influence. It's not who you are, but who you know. That's the thing. So I guess by default, I'm somewhere up there, so I know some of the big people, although in many cases it's the small people who make the difference also. Everyone's important. So I'm trying, like I say, to meet certain leading devotees on certain issues. I can't take up all of them all the time, but there are various books I'd like to write, which there's one book I need to write called The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. So that at least devotees in many countries, when they join, they don't even know actually what is the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. They may think it's a vegetarian, come Reiki, come astrology, come Ayurvedic movement. And you know, sometimes the people pull out these drums and bang on them and sing something also. So they might think that. They don't know what the mood of Srila Prabhupada to surrender to Krishna and take over the world with Krishna consciousness. Many devotees may not know that. Jayadvaita Maharaj, you can blame him for this one. He's very much against food for life, which devotees joining our movement, it's a major part of our movement. He's against it. He's not against prasadam distribution, but he's against the representation of our movement as a mundane welfare organization. But I'm giving an example of what, again, you can blame him, it's not my life. An example that devotees joining our movement, they may not, what they see is what they presume is how it should be. But I'm not convinced that in all ways it's what it should be. So I intend to write a book, and then at least that can be there. And then, you know, devotees who still have dinosaur genes in their spiritual makeup, they can read that, and then they can say, what does that bring out, the baby in you? So you can bring out the dinosaur in you,
the dinosaur child.
The dinosaur child? Was it bring out the child? The child. I don't know, there's all these funny things. America's a funny place. Very funny. So, now the Russian translator's not really catching all of this. There's all these sarcastic... One thing I must say, I'm not nearly as sarcastic as Jai Vedamoy. He's way ahead of me.
Thank God.
We are interchangeable. Almost. Yeah.
Is there a mic?
Yeah, there's a mic right here.
I want to thank Maharaj for putting me out of my misery at the very end of your talk when you started to talk about showing a better example. Being better. And it reminded me of how ISKCON worked when Srila Prabhupada walked among us. We were willing to do anything for Srila Prabhupada because we wanted to be like him. He was better than anybody we ever heard, saw, you know,
imagined
anything. And that's what it's all about. Just inspiring people by your life, your consciousness. So, you hit on the head at the end. Thank you.
Sorry, but... I have to keep on reiterating this. I'm not here to make everyone gloomy. But rather to... It's like, what do they call it? Vaccination? You take a vaccine, you might get a little bit sick from the effect, but you don't get the... When the disease comes around, you don't get it. Because you're inoculated.
Thank you.
It's supposed to work like this. Of course, it could be said it's an experiment. But actually, I do this with my disciples also, because I have to deal with this. You know, I can say, you know, what about this? What about that? I have to deal with it. And if I just say, well, you know, oh, that's not real. But it is real. How to deal with it. So, you know, this is part of my practical... I don't pretend that these things don't exist. And if I did, then why should they take me seriously anyway? But understanding what the problem is and what the solution is also. And solution may be that there may not be an immediate solution anyway. We may have to live with certain things. We may have to find the good. Go on with the good. It may be that in some areas our movement, that's one of the points that... Anyway, maybe I can discuss that tomorrow. I don't know, is there any point in want to finish this seminar today?
No.
I'm going to go on with it? Yeah. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything else? Comments? Yeah, please speak very loudly because it looks like you've got a loud voice.
What do you think about...
What do I think about? Dangerous question.
Sounds a little bit like thinking about congregations in terms of your
reading, preacher. No, what I was saying in certain places. I was actually thinking of one specific area which I regularly visit, where most of the devotees, the whole ethos of our movement is like that. So what is like saying, what do I think of the congregation? It's like saying, you know, what do I think of Danish people?
There are so many of them. What do you want to be? Hitler, all Germans are good and all Jews are bad. There's so many Germans and so many Jews and congregation or whatever. It's like they're not all branded as they're all in Maya. Sorry if it came off like that. Obviously it did to you. But actually in many places the congregation they have more life and vigor than the devotees in the temple. They're the ones who make it come to life. So, and in some places all this raking and all this kind of thing, what made you think I was talking about the congregation? Can be the devotees in the temple also. Okay, so we'll finish that, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.